From Odyssey, I'm Lauren Berry, and this is the On Deadline podcast, where you get a deeper dive into stories from our radio newsrooms across the country. Today On Deadline is introducing Vice President and presumptive Democratic presidential nominee Kamala Harris's very own VP pick, Minnesota Governor Tim Walz. Since President Joe Biden dropped out of the race just a few weeks ago, there's been a whirlwind of speculation about who Harris might pick as her running mate. In addition to Walz, Pennsylvania Governor Josh Shapiro appeared to be a strong contender. Illinois Governor J.B. Pritzker was also in the mix, as well as Arizona Senator Mark Kelly. People were still guessing early Tuesday morning, but there were signs that Walz was the guy. Reporter Blois Olson shared this intel with WCCO about a Monday night event.
I will say this, that a few people at the fundraiser felt like Governor Walz was in an amazingly good mood, that there was an energy, that there was a bounce, that his language was all about we. He also made some course corrections. So you're looking for any nugget here. One very, very well-placed source told me last night that this person was 95% sure it was Walz. And I said, well, call me when it's 100. But if it's not, then people very highly placed in the Democratic Party will be surprised as well.
And they were right. But who is Walz? According to NPR PBS News Marist National Poll results released Tuesday, both Kelly and Shapiro were better known and more popular than the Minnesota governor. In fact, 71% of those polled said they'd never heard of him. We'll get to know more about Walz throughout this episode, but here's some starting points. Walz is 60 years old, just a year older than Vice President Harris. He's originally from Nebraska, and he enlisted in the Army National Guard after high school. He eventually retired from the Guard in 2005 as a command sergeant major. He also graduated from Shadron State College with a social science degree in 1989 and has had a career in teaching. That's how he met his wife, Gwen Whipple. While working at Mankato West High School, he also coached the school's football team to its first state championship. In 2006, he was first elected to the United States House of Representatives, and he was reelected for 5 terms. Then, in 2018, he was elected governor of Minnesota. He won re-election in 2022. According to his Minnesota State bio, Walz's accomplishments as governor include providing universal free school meals for students, protecting reproductive freedom, strengthening voting rights, laying the groundwork to get Minnesota to 100% clean electricity by 2024, cutting taxes for the middle class, and expanding paid leave for Minnesota workers. Michael Traugott, professor emeritus of political science at the University of Michigan, offered some more insight into the Walz pick with Odyssey.
He does come across on television as being the guy living next door, but let's talk a little bit about his record. He does have very far-left policies in the state of Minnesota and in Congress. In terms of Vice President Kamala Harris, do you think that that will turn off any independent voters, or do you think that this is a really good choice for them as well?
His views seem to have changed a little bit over time, but he is a veteran. He's a hunter. He was a member of the NRA, although his views about gun control policy changed over time. He has been a social studies teacher. He's very interested in preserving American democracy. So I think that will be part of what he'll contribute to the campaign.
And again, him over some of the other candidates. Why do you think him? Why do you think the Midwest and Minnesota? Because, you know, the Democrats, I think, probably have Minnesota locked up. She's up 10 points in that state. So how does this really help her as opposed to a swing state governor?
Well, my own guess up until an hour ago would have been Josh Shapiro, because there are more electoral votes in Pennsylvania, a very important state for securing the win in the Electoral College. So I would say that probably there's something about the interpersonal dynamics that had a strong impact on her choice. They were both very well qualified, although somewhat different.
Also, during the time of this Israel-Hamas war, did it affect the decision at all?
Well, I think that the Biden administration's position strongly in support of Israel and her membership in the administration presents a problem in certain places, as you know, especially in the state of Michigan. But I don't think that Governor Waltz and Governor Shapiro differed hardly at all in their support of Israel. So I don't think that probably was an important factor in the choice.
On that note, let's backtrack a bit. It's been a very busy summer in American politics. In June, GOP candidate and former President Donald Trump and Biden faced off in a debate. Biden's shaky performance all but upended the race. It increased concerns about his age, and members of his own party called for him to step down as the candidate. Then came the assassination attempt on Trump's life. That was quickly followed by the Republican National Convention, where the candidate sported an ear bandage and announced his own VP pick, controversial hillbilly elegy author and recently elected Senator J.D. Vance. After that came Biden's announcement that he would step down as the Democrats' candidate. U.S. Representative Adam Schiff joined the State of California podcast this week to give us a peek into what's been going on with the Democratic Party behind the scenes.
There's been a lot of speculation that Speaker Emerita Nancy Pelosi was orchestrating this thing behind the scenes. We know that she's been a mentor to you. You're very close. How big a role did she play in your decision to publicly urge President Biden to not run again?
Well, there's been a lot of, commentary that I was essentially doing the speaker's bidding. The reality is I made my own independent judgment. I didn't discuss my decision to go public with her before I made the decision or the announcement. What she was conferring about with the president privately, I will leave to her to describe or not describe. I think that she was certainly aware of the sentiment of a great many members of the House and Senate. When I spoke out, I spoke, I think, for a lot of my colleagues, many of whom in very tough races, who felt, the downward pull of gravity and the danger that the path we were on might lead not only to loss at the top of the ticket, but down ballot as well. And for my own part, having worked so hard to hold Donald Trump accountable, remove him from office, to serve on the January 6th committee and hold him accountable for the violent attack on the Capitol, I felt if I didn't do everything I could to make sure he never set foot in the Oval Office again, that I would regret it later if I felt I should have said something when I didn't. But, I will say it was hard for me personally because I have such great admiration for President Biden and more than admiration, affection for him. And he has been just a remarkable president, one of the most remarkable in my life.
All right. So now Vice President Harris has to choose a running mate. She's about to do that. Any insight on who that might be? And what do you think will be the most important considerations for her? Geography, helping in a swing state, balancing her ideologically, or just somebody she likes the most who she thinks can help her run the country?
I think sort of reverse order, probably the last criterion will be who she likes the most. She's going to pick someone of necessity because it's a hard, close race, who is most likely to help her win that race. And that all comes down to those battleground states. And a number of those contenders either come from battleground states or they come from states in the region that would nonetheless make their selection important and influential. Josh Shapiro in Pennsylvania, obviously very popular in Pennsylvania, could help deliver among the most popular, most important, rather, of the battleground states, Pennsylvania. Tim Walz in Minnesota, very well thought of throughout the Midwest, so could be influential in any number of those Midwestern states. Has a great kind of Midwestern sensibility about him that is really appealing. Mark Kelly, veteran astronaut, personal experience with, gun tragedy in the family, speaks well, articulately, thoughtfully on the border. He brings a lot of value to and others. So it's a deep bench and a tough decision. But I think the first priority for the vice president is going to be who helps me win, who helps me in these key states.
Walz might not be as well known as some of the other VP contenders, but he has recently gained some internet clout. The New York Times has described him as a plain-spoken progressive who brings Midwestern appeal to the ticket. They also noted that his takedowns of Trump and other conservatives have gotten a lot of attention. These are weird people on the other side. They want to take books away. They want to be in your exam room. That's what it comes down to. And don't, you know, get sugar coating on this. These are weird ideas, Walls added. He shared that clip on X, where it has nearly 6 million views and 50,000 likes. In response to the video, David Hogg, a gun control activist and survivor of the Marjorie Stoneman Douglas school shooting, described Walls as a total Midwestern dad who is hilarious and genuine. The Weird People clip isn't even his only viral moment, according to the Star Tribune. Walls also went after Vance for his comment that Democrats are a bunch of childless cat ladies who are miserable at their own lives. My God, they went after cat people. Good luck with that. Turn on the internet and see what cat people do when you go after them, said Walls. Earlier this month, Walls himself joined Odyssey in the Twin Cities to talk about his internet fame, the VP race, and more.
You hot as fish grease right now.
Well, things are happening a little bit, but I think what we all know is a lot of things changed in the last week. We have seen a burst of energy around Kamala Harris that I don't, you know, I was saying, Gilletta, for folks who are a little older would remember, this felt like 2008 when we saw a young guy coming out of Illinois and telling us that the future can be better and we don't need to be mean to our neighbors. And so I'm just kind of there, and I think they've heard me say this, that I'm just really fatigued and tired of all the negativity, all the things are going bad, we can't do this. That is not who Minnesotans are, and it's not who the country is. And look, I think these young people, one thing, I'm very proud. I spent a big chunk of my professional life as a teacher, and I know that optimism is built into them. So it's been exciting. You tell your son thank you, though. I'm excited about that. My 23-year-old daughter likes me a lot now, too, so I'm not as embarrassed
as I used to be. Oh, yeah, everybody want to be your friend now. But you are at a rally. You're just leaving a rally in St. Paul, the Labor Center, talking about Vice President Harris getting out there for her as she runs for President of the United States of America. What's that vibe like? What was that feeling like? What were y'all talking about?
Oh, my God. Oh, my goodness. I joined by Senator Klobuchar, by, you know, the First Lady, the Betty McCollum, the Lieutenant Governor, Keith Ellison, Mayor Carter, and that room was packed, and it was a beautiful rainbow of people in there talking about optimistic future of what we can do, and we're not going back. The Vice President's right. We're not going back to a time when women don't make their own decisions. We're not going back to a time when we call accomplished people names, and the vibe was one of optimism. Look, I'm just going to name it. It hasn't felt that way to me since 2008. The place was packed. There's 2,500 of those across the country. We filled every single door not shipped from now for the next couple of weeks. People were out in this heat going to talk to their neighbors that we have got a wonderful opportunity here to work together to solve some problems. So it is a new day. And like I said, it's amazing how quickly things can change. And I'm jazzed. And there was a lot of young people like your son who were there. They weren't part of this. You and I forget this. It seems like it seems like Barack Obama was yesterday, 2008, 16 years ago. If these kids were under 15, they don't remember. They don't write. Mm-hmm. They don't know if they're under 30. They never saw what an optimistic, joyful politic can look like. Because look, it has been a struggle. 16 and 20 and COVID and the things, George Floyd, the things they've been through. It was like a new day down there. So I'm just. And I love to look across that. I just love this idea that of who we are as a nation. So it was really fun.
Now, I have to talk about Trump has a rally himself in Minnesota. All eyes are on our state today. It is tonight. Yeah. Hundreds of people are lined up. He's going to be making a speech to a lot of people who live in our state. And I got to go back to a speech he made last night where he talked about if you vote this year, you'll never have to vote again. And for me, when I heard that, I had to stop breathing for a minute. I'm like, oh, my God, is this a dog whistle? What are we saying about our democracy? Already are coming off the January 6th situation. And, is this something that he's saying to these people to get them all riled up? You know, that was frightening for me to hear.
Right. Frightening. Well, you've lived through this and, and voting rights and everything else. Yes. Yes. That is a terrifying thing. I think we know what he was saying. We know where he went. And, we simply have to take him seriously on this. We have to take that as the truth. When somebody tells you who they are, believe them. And I think he believes it. And here's what I hope. We get into this thing that both sides do it. both sides do this. You know, when our there's some folks on my side, yeah, they'll push the issue. You know what it usually involves? They want everybody to have health care, or they want to make sure everybody has a living wage, or they want to make sure people are left alone to make their own decisions, their own health care decisions. Last night, you heard the candidate for president of the United States say, if you vote for me this year, you won't have to worry about voting because I'll fix it going forward. I hope the press talks about that. I'm glad you're talking. Mike, I'll be honest with you. I'm not seeing it out there a lot. I'm seeing people kind of say, oh, this is just him talking. At that same event, he found the need to call an accomplished attorney, an attorney general, the first female vice president of the United States, decided to call her a bum. Now, I don't know about you, but I know I got inundated with all my female relatives asking where they can sign up and go fight. Because that's your idea of what America needs? No, what we need to know is how are we going to pay for health care? How are we going to deal with clean energy and deal with climate change? How are we going to make sure that people have a living wage for a house? How are we going to make sure businesses continue to thrive? So I'm glad you're pointing it out. I'm just afraid people write it off as just another statement. He didn't, and look, he did not clarify it. He did not misspeak. He's being very clear. And what you saw, the contrast to that 6 days ago, Joe Biden said, look, things are too important. I might not be able to get this done, so I'm going to step gladly out of here. The last time we saw Donald Trump do that was when he stood down there and told people to go to the Capitol on January 6th. Yeah. So I don't look, I'm trying to be bipartisan. I'm not going to be bipartisan when you try and overthrow the government. I'm not going to be bipartisan when you tell us that we're not going to be able to vote anymore. I'm not going to be bipartisan when you tell Madam Vice President, call her a bomb. Those are things we don't have to be. Now, if you say, look, I got a better idea on taxes. Okay, I'm listening. Look, you guys could do better on this, and you could put money into this, and it would make a difference. Okay, I'm listening. Those are things that we could agree on, but let's just agree that this is not both sides do it type of thing. That is a pretty direct attack on the democracy, in my opinion.
So now you've gotten to know the Democrats' VP pick a bit better. Think wholesome Midwestern dad vibes, liberal policies, and an ability to create a viral soundbite. Lee M. Mierenghoff, director of the Marist Institute for Public Opinion, noted that vice presidential picks typically don't do much to sway voters. However, he said Democrats are hoping a generally unknown choice will fare better than Vance, whose unfavorable rating has increased by more than 10 points since late July. As of Tuesday, Harris was faring better than Trump in all major polling averages, according to Newsweek. Citing Real Clear Politics, the outlet said that this is the first time a Democrat has been in the lead for the 2024 presidential race. Of course, we'll have to wait until the Democratic National Convention to see the Harris-Walls ticket finalized. Keep listening to the On Deadline podcast to stay up to date on everything you need to know. This show is produced by Joe Heedy, Christy Strauser, Zach Clark, and by me. I'm Lauren Berry, and I want to say thanks for listening to On Deadline, Odyssey's serving of a top news story just for you. Subscribe on the Odyssey app or wherever you find your podcasts to stay informed.